David Reske, CEO of Now Speed Marketing, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is Billy Kreit. Billy is the VP of Marketing at SIBO. Before that, he was a fractional CMO for several other companies, including Fidelis, a cybersecurity company, and Billy, perhaps some others that you'll share with us, but welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, David. I'm really excited to be here.
First of all, just to help us get to know you a little bit, what is SIBO and why are you there?
Yeah, well, SIBO Technologies is an agricultural technology firm, and our mission is to scale regenerative agriculture, which is a fancy way of saying sustainable farming, lowering greenhouse gas emissions, doing carbon sequestration to help mitigate climate change and maybe even someday start to reverse it. And we are founded by Flagship Pioneering back in 2015. They are the VC firm out of Boston that famously founded Moderna, who is famous from making the vaccines that helped, save and reduce symptoms from COVID-19 as that was sweeping around the world. So we've got a great VC backer, very science-focused company, and we use modeling and artificial intelligence and satellite-based computer vision to do all kinds of carbon quantification modeling, greenhouse gas emissions modeling, and farming practice detection from space. What this allows our customers to do, our customers are big companies that have agriculture somewhere in their supply chain, and it allows them to create programs that incentivize farmers to adopt new regenerative agriculture and carbon reducing farming practices. That in turn allows those companies to create low carbon intensity products. It allows them to make great headway on their carbon and climate commitments, like going net zero by a certain date, and reduces their scope 3 emissions. So we're really very much a technology first, technology centric company, helping to tackle the world's biggest, some of the world's biggest challenges around climate change and regenerative agriculture.
Wow, that's so exciting. I mean, you're really with a firm that's making just a big impact in so many ways. So, and well, sure, we'll get into some examples of that as we get into our conversation. But, I like to start these conversations with what I call a MythBuster question. And the question that we've been talking about is that the issue that we've been talking about is that the big companies that are making commitments on the environment are really just greenwashing, and they're just faking it for good press. Well, true or not true? How do you feel about
you know
that?
What? You know what, David? That is a myth.
All right. Let's hear it.
Yeah. You know, it's really unfortunate, I think, that especially in some of the early days, there absolutely were some organizations and some individuals that were acting with bad intent or doing just kind of the bare minimum to get by and pass muster when it comes to the court of public opinion or even regulatory responsibilities in America and around the world. So the track record makes that myth a little bit understandable, but it is by and large, and certainly in our experience here at SIBO Technologies, absolutely busted. The companies and the organizations with whom we work are absolutely committed to and full believers in understanding what the climate challenges are around us and how those impact their business, their supply chain, and the people who rely on them. Now, when you think about agriculture, which is our special area, every farmer is essentially a small business, at least here in the United States. Even the big giant farms, these are family farms. Doesn't matter if they have thousands of acres or tens of thousands of acres or just a handful of acres, they are making their business and literally betting the farm every single year that they're making cropping practice decisions, planting decisions, and farming practice decisions. And so when they are doing their work of growing the food and the fiber and the ingredients for fuels that we all consume, they are the ones who are doing this in order to, they have a full vested interest in making sure that the soils remain healthy and that they are doing the most efficient and sustainable practices that there are. You won't meet a more truly and sincerely environmentally conscious person than a farmer, because that is literally their livelihood. And in many cases, the livelihood of their family through generations. And then as you trace that commitment to yield, to sustainability, to growth, you see that traversing all the way through the supply chain. And the big companies that are turning, corn and soybeans, sugarcane and wheat and rice, all of these products into the goods and consumer products that we use, they have overwhelmingly committed to climate goals, to lowering carbon intensity, which is kind of the measure of carbon dioxide and equivalent emissions that happen through their entire production process, starting from on the farm, through transportation, through manufacturing and processing, all the way to what's now called full life cycle, understanding how we consume those products and what we do with the waste products of them. So the companies, and the research is absolutely clear. I was just reading a story this morning about how the growth of companies who are creating scientifically based commitments that are evaluated by independent third parties every single year, the ranks of these organizations are swelling. And it's the who's who of the household names that are in your house and my house, in our listeners and viewers' houses, that we, that are responsible for manufacturing the food that we eat, the food that our food eats, the fibers in the clothes that we wear, and even the fuel that we put in our cars and increasingly in our airplanes. Those companies are putting real money and have some of the absolute brightest scientists in the world working to reduce the impact of greenhouse gas emissions for all of us. And it's one of these things where the science of SIBO technologies proves time and time again that there is an economic benefit and there is a production benefit and an efficiency benefit to sustainable and regenerative agriculture practices that are funded by these companies for the farmers. It's literally a win-win-win for the entire, for the entire world ultimately. And that's why we see this market space growing.
Yeah.
So absolutely. The companies are absolutely sincere. The companies are putting their money where their mouth is. And they are hiring some of the best scientists, fully credentialed people, and passionate pioneers around creating sustainable and regenerative climate solutions for all of us.
So you make a really powerful case that this industry around agriculture just affects all of our lives, right? So it's the food we eat, the fibers in our clothing, it's all of that's being produced by farmers and by agriculture and processed by, we call them, sometimes we derogatorily say big companies, but they're big companies for a reason. They produce products that we want at prices we can afford. And so that all works in the supply chain. But let's get back to this issue of making it more environmentally friendly. So there are obviously investments that come with that. It's not like there's a free lunch or they would have done it long ago, right? So there are some costs and investments they have to make in order to make that. Let's talk a little bit later about what those could be, but what are some of the issues they're facing when making some of those decisions? Like, if a farmer has to change the crops they plant, or a big company has to change how they invest in, dealing with waste or processing food, what are the issues that they're wrestling with? And why isn't it just easy for everybody to say, oh, well, we'll just make these changes and everything will be better for all of us?
Sure. That's a great question. And one we grapple with here at SIBO Technologies every day. The reality is that there's a number of factors that all combine to create some tension, some barriers, and to create a hill that has to be climbed in order to prove and persuade and convince all of the different stakeholders involved. Part of this which is the momentum that we see right now, is, hey, climate change and soil loss and water challenges are real issues for our business. That's on the business side. And no longer are these are big businesses or small businesses and any business in the supply chain, no longer are they able to say, hey, we're insulated from that. We don't need to worry about what's happening to the farmers. And that is, that's a factor of our increasingly interconnected world. We can see the interconnection manifesting in commodity prices and raw commodity prices. We've seen the impacts on the supply chain that came because of the COVID crisis. If you remember back just a year and a half, 2 years ago, the supply chain was completely backed up across everything because of, you know, because of this virus. So we've got this deeply interconnected world, and that's true for food, fuel, fiber, and that's true for all of the agricultural products that are part of our supply chain. So you've got the interconnectedness challenge. On the farmer side of things, they are fundamentally driven by seasonal decisions to, and they take, in many cases, large operating loans every single year, and they bet, literally, they're making a bet based on the weather, on their practices, that the commodity prices for whatever they're planting is going to be enough at the end of the season to pay for not only that operating loan, those operating expenses, but also give them enough money to live on so they can pay their mortgage and send their kids to school and have a little something to save. The, you know, the normal things that all, the rest of us think about. But farmers, as essentially small business owners, are taking on that risk and that financial burden. And that brings in then the financial institutions, the whole set of agricultural lenders and agricultural banks that are there to service the farmers and those annual operating loans, the capital expenses to build new bins and silos and storage facilities. Things like a new combine harvester are hundreds of thousands of dollars. These are expensive pieces of equipment and machinery that have to be maintained. They have to be either leased or purchased, and there's big expenses associated with that. Now, when we talk about, hey, everything's driven by yield at the end of the day for a farmer, that's why in the 1900s and kind of through that, the early parts of the Industrial Revolution, going back to the 1800s, mid-1900s, you had this surge of, you know, chemical fertilizers and new types of seeds that were really optimized for yield, bigger kernels, closer planting density, all these sorts of factors that did, in fact, boost yield. We had a lot of innovation in those areas, but that came at a cost of depleting the soil and turning that soil into dust. And that dust started to blow away in the off season. Then it was just exposed to the elements and you'd get big dust storms, of course, dust bowls in the early 1900s, 1920s and 30s. That whole era, and you have the depletion of the topsoils, that really fertile topsoil. Well, then comes in this notion of regenerative agriculture, which is just the new way of talking about sustainable farming, but the ability to do that at scale. And that means implementing new practices that are really ancient practices. And these are things like cover cropping. That means keeping a set of grasses or things with roots down on the field, even when you don't have your cash crop. There's practices that helps to prevent soil loss and soil erosion. And as those cover crops die off, say in the winter, they become essentially green fertilizer. Then you have new practices like no-till farming. Tilling actually turns up the soil. It can be harmful for the biosphere, the microbes and things living in and under the soil. And in some cases, tilling is absolutely important to do when you get soil compaction. But in many cases, you can grow very profitable crops without tilling the soil. Well, the farmers, in order to do that, need new sorts of equipment that can drill into untilled soil and plant the seeds. That's another capital expense. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about kind of the different expenses that farmers have. Well, who's going to bear that cost? The studies, the economic studies show that the adoption of regenerative farming practices from conventional farming practices take anywhere from 1 to 5 years in order to turn profitable, in order to for yield to go up and for that profitability to go up. So there's a bridge that's going on between 1 to 5 years, and that depends on region and weather and all kinds of other factors. Well, who's going to fund that practice when farmers are literally living season to season, year to year? That's where the big companies come in. And when companies come in and they fund and they help to incentivize that transition from conventional farming practices to regenerative farming practices, then the farmers go, okay, now I'm not at risk or as much risk of losing, not being able to service my operational loans or losing my house or not being able to make what I need to live. The governments and the companies are now funding that transition from conventional practices to regenerative practices.
So,
and behind all of this, you have kind of that generational history, right? If a farmer no one knows the land better than the farmer who's been farming that land for generations. And so when you have somebody who's been doing something the same way and they know it works, it's hard to convince them to change kind of the fundamental way that they've been doing things. So there's a generational shift as well that's happening.
Yeah. So let's dig into that a little bit more, because I think you've talked a lot about this idea of regenerative farming, and it's different. And you're asking farmers to change their practices in ways that are better for the environment and better for the whole world, right? Are farmers being asked to lose money in this? Are they kind of being asked to, is the ask, hey, we want you to do the right thing for the planet, which means you've got to change and you've got to be less profitable and lose money in order to do that. Is that the ask, or is the technology evolving so that they can, maybe there's a bridge, that 1 to 5 year ROI thing, or are they being asked to make investments that are ultimately going to prove to be more, make them more profitable in the long run? Is it hey, you guys got to hunker down and just take one on the chin for the environment, or there is a way to kind of get you to be better in the long run?
Right. No, that's a great question. And that is absolutely the fear. That's not the truth. That's the myth. The fear is that the farmers are being asked to just, to put climate change on their backs.
Yeah.
And at SIBO Technologies, we don't believe that's a fair ask for the farmers. The companies and the governments who are creating the incentive programs, they also don't believe that that's a fair ask for the farmers. So the reality is that, what are the factors that dictate, commodity prices, which is ultimately what the farmers, are going to be, buying and selling. Well, there's market fluctuations. Who can predict that? Well, they and other companies, not SIBO, do the best that they can to do that. There's weather. Who can predict, what the weather is going to do, or, severe weather events. And then there's the things that are in their control. That's where the regenerative farming practices come in. And this is why it's so important that companies like SIBO Technologies exist, to have the science and the evidence that proves, hey, when you adopt, conservation tillage practices, you are keeping more soil there, which helps to preserve the soil and the root structure, which gives you more climate resilient crops, meaning able to withstand extreme weather events, have deeper root structures, which means they can withstand drought and low water seasons much better. And that root structure and that soil structure is also able to absorb, high wet weather events, floods and big storms, because there's more soil to absorb and more root structures to absorb that excess water and prevent runoff. So the science is absolutely and unequivocally clear that these processes are, and these farming practices are 100% better for the soil, for the mid and long term structure of the farm, producing better yield, healthier yields, and ultimately, because now we can measure it, a lower carbon intensity, which is kind of the carbon score of the yield. How many grams of carbon dioxide per bushel of corn or soy typically or wheat exist. And now companies are being willing to pay a premium for low carbon intensity products, or they're saying, hey, we're going to buy at the regular market price low carbon intensity products first, and then maybe some conventional carbon intensity products. And so you have this groundswell of market support for low carbon intensity grains that are coming into the supply chain to create low carbon intensity products, whether that's shirts or steaks or, you know, vegetables or fuel for your, you know, sustainable aviation fuel or ethanol or things like that. There's tax incentives that are coming on board, and it all turns on, can you quantify the amount of carbon dioxide or greenhouse gas emission reduction that is going into the production of your product? That's a new ask. That's a new ask for the farmers, and the technology, including SIBO technologies, are really at the forefront of pioneering the ability to quantify something that we can't see, quantify the greenhouse gas emissions avoided, quantify the carbon dioxide that's sequestered in and under the soil, and to do that in a scientifically valid and incredibly rigorous way, so that now when a farmer is growing their corn or their soy as a commodity, they're also now able to start carbon farming as a commodity. And that means they can get paid for the carbon that they are sequestering through the implementation of these new practices, in addition to getting the benefits of a better yield, a heartier yield, a yield that's not going to be as subject to extreme weather events. So now, does that take some time to get from, you know, point A to point B? That's that fundamental time shift period. If you've got really bad soil, it's not going to turn into really good soil in one season. Yeah. It will take time.
You make a very powerful case for that. You know, and I take something like, I'll take a consumer product as an example. So many of us, I've thought about, you know, getting an electric car. Wouldn't that be great for the environment? Let's take a very simple, simplistic view. And as I think about that, there's all these other factors that people talk about. Well, what does it cost to produce the car in the first place? Is it more intensive from a carbon perspective to produce the battery technology? What happens to the battery after its useful life, and how do we dispose of that? And it, you know, the environmental impacts of producing a battery powered car versus using a traditional car. And so, and how much am I going to drive it? So there's all these complexity in that decision that makes me say, is it really better? And what you're saying in agriculture is you're finding ways that if the farmer has the same decision, they're being asked to make an investment to make their farm better for the environment and to be more productive, right? So there are other benefits. But you're coming along and helping them quantify that and helping their customers quantify that in a scientifically proven way, which is so important, because you can't just say, hey, we're doing a better thing. We have to understand why and what difference it's really going to make.
Right. And if the companies that are wanting to create these incentive programs to pay the farmers either a stipend or a full cost cover of practice switching or practice transition, they want to be confident that the farmers who they are paying are actually doing the things that they're asking for. And they want to know, hey, I'm actually buying my raw materials, my cotton or my wheat or my rice or my corn or my soy, from the farmers and the fields that have actually implemented these practices, rather than somebody who or a region that might say 60% of the people in this region do it, and so if you buy it from there, it's probably good enough, right? So the idea is, not only do you have to have scientifically valid, independently verified, scientifically rigorous ways of quantifying the reductions in greenhouse gas emissions and the carbon sequestration, but also you have to have the programs engine, the program's ability to find and enroll and pre-qualify farmers and land that qualifies for certain programs. And then you've got to make it easy for those growers to actually enroll in these programs, because their job is farming. Their job is not to go dig in a shoebox of you know, nitrogen application receipts that's up in their closet from 2017 and figure out how many tons of nitrogen did they spray on their corn crop back then. That's something that nobody wants to do, let alone a farmer who wants to be out actually tending his or her field, and doing the business of farming. And so what we've done at SIBO Technologies is we've built all of the modeling, the verification, the monitoring and reporting capabilities into a platform that is fundamentally surfaced by a programs engine. Think of it as a really sophisticated workflow engine that makes it really easy for farmers and their representatives to find and engage in programs that are going to pay them. And we do this using satellite-based remote sensing and artificial intelligence and image recognition to pre-qualify farmers and land for programs without them having to lift a finger. You can think of it kind of like Rocket Mortgage. They're going to pre-qualify you for a financial product just based on what public information they can find out about you. And then you're like, oh, that might sound interesting. You can fill out a couple more form fields, and then you've got your loan or your mortgage, whatever it might be. Same idea for what we're doing at SIBO Technologies is to say, hey, we're able to infer your practices given what we know about the history of this region, what we can see from space over many years, and like we can identify the crops and the planting dates and where you're tilling and how you're irrigating and when are things emerging and what your tillage practices are. Are you using strip till or no till or conventional till? We can identify all that stuff without having to ask the farmer to go remember what they were doing or go look it up in their, in their notebook. That makes it really easy fundamentally for the farmers to engage and engage in programs then that are going to pay them either, typically a per acre payment in exchange for them implementing these practices and having that being verified by our technology. Those payments then go to either subsidized or fully cover the cost or create profit for the growers for the expenses that they may incur, that they do incur by doing the business of farming. There's always an upfront expense, right? You got to buy seeds and fertilizers and, fuel for your equipment and paying your mortgage and your capital costs and all that kind of stuff. All those expenses are shouldered by farmers every single season, year in and year out. And asking them to shoulder more cost because we want, something that's going to be better for the environment. I think it's fair that we all are sharing that cost. And that's why when governments get involved, they're creating programs that are paying farmers for these practices. And when companies are getting involved, they are doing the same sort of thing. They're making payments to farmers in exchange for proven low carbon intensity commodities, which then we feel really good about buying as consumers. Hey, at the end of the day, if you're seeing, two boxes of, cornflakes at the store and one says low carbon, 99 of us are going to buy the low carbon box and, let the other one sit on the shelf. That's a global phenomenon. That's going on everywhere around the globe.
Yeah, and that's why we all really care about that.
It's true. We do as humanity care about that. And you can see that in regulation and in conversation. And it's not just, one party or another here in the US, it's around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So we just have a few minutes left, Billy, but I do want to talk about the demand side a little bit more. Some of the companies that are driving this on the demand side. So, ideally when I go through my cereal aisle in my grocery store, it's like this massive set of cereal that I get overwhelmed with every time I go through. I'd want to think that every one of those companies is thinking the way that you're talking about, that they're all concerned about the environment. They're all concerned about buying the right kind of products that are low carbon and really making a difference in the world. In your experience, how have you seen those companies change over the last few years? And what percentage of those companies are really active in this? Is it kind of a nascent thing? Is it a couple percent? There's a few companies doing it and it's going to drive change over years. Is it half the companies? They're really there? Or is it everybody? Is everybody doing it? You know, just give me some sense of, and I won't hold you to these numbers, but you know, what's your sense of like, what, how big is the industry, the food industry in particular, moving?
Right. When we talk about food in our space, we talk about consumer packaged goods. Mm-hmm. And within the CPG, consumer packaged goods industry, it is ubiquitous, at least in the household name brands, that everybody's out there having made carbon and climate commitments, scope three emissions commitments. We're going to hear that word a lot more, scope three, scope three, scope three. It's one of the scopes of emissions accounting that the SEC here in the US requires, the European Union requires scope one, scope two, and scope three accounting. So they are all doing it. And the CPG organizations typically will have an ESG team, environment, sustainability, and governance team. And as part of their annual reports, which you can find on their, you know, if they're a public company, they're published right alongside their annual stockholder and 10Q reports and all those sorts of financial reports, you have their ESG reports or their sustainability reports. And that's where all of the companies are, at least in the ESG space, overwhelmingly are making headway in this area. And that's why when we talked at the very beginning about what's the myth, it's like, no, you know what? All of these companies are sincere and all of these companies are making efforts along the way. What is different between them is the pace and the scale of the commitments. There's huge organizations like Amazon and Microsoft and Google/Alphabet and Apple, you know, the big technology names that are way out in front talking about how they are committed to being net zero, how they may already have achieved a net zero emissions balance, and how they are, increasing their engagement around this area of fighting climate change with their business and their full life cycle of their supply chain and how their products are ended. The CPGs, because they have agriculture in their supply chain, are absolutely invested in this area. So the anybody who uses grain, right? You've got your big alcohol companies, AB InBev, huge leader in this area. Nestle, huge leader in this area. Pepsi, Unilever, huge leaders in these area. Mars, huge leaders in this area. Then you have the grain companies, also huge leaders in this area. There's kind of a whole set of middle tier of grain brokers and commodity buyers who are all, they're responsible for, buying the grain from the farms and kind of accumulating that and aggregating that and then selling it off to the, to the next stage in the manufacturing and the production process, ultimately leading to the CPG companies. So they're all involved and they're all making commitments to this. Where the pace is different is when it comes down to actually engaging the farmer. Because at the end of the day, the farmer's the one who's got to make the changes. And farms and farmers are very distributed. They're very diverse. They're very diffuse. And so it's not like you can say, oh, I've got a lithium mine somewhere in the world and I'm going to mine my lithium and make batteries and put it in my car as a closed supply chain. And then you kind of know all of your environmental accounting every step along the way. Farming and agriculture is very different because you have 800,000 farmers in the U.S., give or take, that's just in the U.S. And some of them have got, 20 acres and some of them have got 200,000. So how do you, engage all of that? And that's the fundamental challenge that SIBO Technologies is helping to solve, engaging those farmers to help create new opportunities and bring the opportunities that the companies want to provide to those farmers with scientifically backed quantification and technology and ease of use for engagement with those programs.
Wow. Billy, you've opened my eyes to this whole world in a powerful way. Thank you for taking the time to kind of explain all to me. I'm really encouraged with what's happening in that industry and the role that your company's playing. If some of our listeners want to learn more about what Cboe's doing in this area, is there a good place for them to go?
Well, David, this has been an absolutely terrific conversation. And yes, please visit us at cibotechnologies.com. That's cibotechnologies.com. And we'd love to talk with you to share kind of what we're doing and to share the stories of how the farmers that are implementing these practices are making a difference. It's really amazing.
Yeah, well, it's exciting, and it's exciting to see the role Cboe is playing in all that. You're making the data and the analysis, the science you're doing makes a lot of it possible. So thank you for your input, your impact. Thanks again for this conversation, Billy. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thanks, David. It's been a pleasure.